so eagerly waiting for morning. I must see what my Lord's been about. I will run to the door of the prison to see
It was about that time that my parents had moved out, Robert and Sarah Watson, and Chuck and Sylvia Curry moved here. And they were of the next generation, of course, older than us. And we were living on the reservation in a trailer court. And there were quite a few of us in that trailer court, several families that were living there in Fort Defiance. But it was not a suitable place to raise a family. We had a dump right next door, and they would dump animals there that were dead, and you could smell it.
I played in that dump a lot.
It was not a very good place to live for a lot of reasons. So my parents were concerned about us, because they saw us raising little children. And my dad started looking for a place where we could buy land. And because most of the land around here is either owned by the Navajo Nation, it's reservation land or federal land, there's hardly anything available. Well, he finally found some land. And there were seven families that went in together to buy this land. It was 15 acres.
During that time, I had some interesting dreams. God gave me dreams as a child. I think the dream about the land was probably when I was 10 or 11, maybe. And in the dream, I saw this valley. And there was this hill on the side. There was a tractor up on the hill. And it was this beautiful kind of valley, but it was definitely sage. I mean, it was our kind of valley. It was
weeds.
Yeah, it was weeds and sage. But it was this nice, beautiful, and you could see these mountains on either side of it. And to the right, there was a building there. And I wasn't sure if that was the church. I thought maybe it was, but. Few weeks later, my dad came up to me and he said, "We're going to go out and see the land that we're going to buy from the mine." And we're sitting there and we all prayed together. We got in a circle and, "Is this where the Lord has for us?" And I remember kind of walking off and I was very upset because it wasn't the land in my dream. And I thought, if that's the land God was giving us, this isn't it. I knew it just wasn't right.
Not long after we bought the land, and the mine approached us and said that they had the mineral rights under that land where we were, that we had bought, and that they were planning to mine there and they wanted to buy it from us. And we told them, "Well, it's not for sale. We need a place to live. How about if we trade you land?" "Well, we'll consider it." To make a long story short, they wound up giving us 40 acres in exchange for the 15 acres.
So we went to take a look at it, and when we stood there, it was exactly my dream. It was exactly the hill on the side was exactly right. The hill on this side was exactly right. And I knew right where the church building was going to go.
It was all in God's plan.
It was.
They agreed to build a road, a bridge over the Wash. They fenced it, and then later on, they built a pump house and
poured gravel on the road.
Yeah, it was amazing how God brought this about. When we moved here, we all felt the same way, that this was a gift from God. There's no way that we could have gotten all this land, and we knew that God had given us more land that we could even afford because of that trade. And we had a desire to set aside land for the church. And we went to the branch because there were many members who were actually not living here. So we went to the branch and we told them of the desire that we had to set aside land and give it to the church for the building. At that moment, the brother got up and spoke in the gift of tongues. And the interpretation was, it's not yours to give, it's mine already. And the Lord helped us to understand that we were only giving back land that really belonged to Him. And so that began the process of building the church that we have now. But we were still meeting in Red Lake. When the lease was up on the Quonset hut, by that time we had built the church here, and we had met some wonderful people in Red Lake. We'd become friends with them. And one of the families, Nancy Wanika and her husband, Key Wanika, came up to us. And Key had just recently been ordained a minister, I believe a non-denominational minister. And he asked if they could continue to hold church services there at the Quonset hut. And we told them, sure. And at that point, now the buildings belonged to us. We just gave them back to their family. And Key and Nancy began to hold services there. And they had quite a following.
I think we should talk a little bit about the building of this building. We did not have the funds to build this building. And, you know, it was largely on faith that the project started, that somehow God was going to provide, because, you know, the people here weren't making a lot of money. You didn't have any millionaires in this congregation that were going to be donating large sums of money to the project. And so, you know, there was a lot of prayer and a lot of faith. Well, one of our sisters here, Sister Sylvia Curry, had worked with a gentleman in Los Angeles when they still lived there by the name of Mr. Daggs. And Mr. Daggs adopted this work, largely because of the respect he had for Sister Sylvia when she worked for him, but also because he came to enjoy the spirit of the work and believe in the purpose of the work. So as we were building the building and praying that God would provide for the cost of it, Sister Sylvia started receiving letters from Mr. Daggs, and there would be large checks in the letters. And I remember the very first time she said that, you know, she said, you know, none of us knew who Mr. Daggs was, and she introduced who he was to us and said she got a letter from him and said, and inside the letter there was a check for, I don't know, a few thousand.
$5,000.
So, I mean, at the time, you know, we were very excited. We didn't.
Well, that was just one of many.
I know, but we didn't realize that at the time. My point was, we were excited about the $5,000. It was a huge donation. And it was very, very exciting. And then another donation, to the point where when Sister Sylvia got up to testify, you got a little excited because you're thinking maybe we got another letter from Mr. Daggs. And sure enough, frequently she would say, I got another letter from Mr. Daggs. And then you kind of hold on to your seat. How much was in the letter? How much? And she'd say, well, there's a letter. There's a check for $5,000. Yay! I mean, it was something that I think God just placed on his heart. You know, somebody who's not a member of the church and not a member of this mission, but just fell in love with it and decided he was a very wealthy man, and he kind of adopted. He wanted this to be, he's a huge part of this building, and you can't tell the story of this building without honoring the God placing it on Mr. Dagg's heart to donate a huge sum of money to make sure this building happened.
He even told her, well, my church is dragging their feet.
he says, I'm going to donate it to your church. So he was very much a part of it.
Yeah.
Good man.
And it emphasized that there were a lot of unsung heroes of this work, people who never were really a part of the work kind of on a daily basis. People like Glenn McNabb and Bill Lotgering and you know, people who put in a lot of...
Nick Liberto
did the electrical. Sam Dill came out and he helped with the electrical. And
Pacciuto family.
Dan Pacciuto. He's the one that
did
put
the stonework.
The stonework there.
Bob McDonald.
And then we had a craftsman come from Albuquerque who was a craftsman in stained glass windows. Our cousin Sam Randy.
I just remember raising my children here and feeling such a safety and peace here because everyone here was part of the church. I was still growing up when I first moved here, and I really needed that, that support. They all kind of took me under their wing and gave me some great love and great meals, great
fellowship.
Just fellowship. I loved it.
It was like a piece of Zion to be able to go up and down, walk up and down the street. Somebody would see you walking and they would come out and they'd start walking with you, and we would talk about the things of God, and it was glorious.
I wouldn't be here if it weren't for, you know, my dad coming to the Navajo Reservation and meeting my mom. Some of my fond memories are going to each other's homes and sitting around the table or sitting in each other's living rooms, sitting on the floor, you know, and just, I feel like we were basking in the testimonies of these beautiful brothers and sisters and their love for missionary work, their love for the Lord, and just their passion for what they were doing there. It was hard not to feel like you were in a special place.
Mm-hmm. Living in this beautiful place where so many people had chosen to move there for the sole purpose to bring the gospel to the seed of Joseph, I never realized how much of an impact it really made on me until now as an adult, and even my husband and I deciding where we were gonna live, we knew that it had to be near a reservation because that is God's work and that is something that we felt very strongly about. And it has put a fire inside of me that it makes me so excited thinking of what God is gonna do and hopefully that I could be a part of it.
Early on in the work, we felt the desire on Sundays. We would have a morning service, we'd have an afternoon service. Then after the afternoon service, we would go to either the hospital or the jail.
We had Youth in Action come out in 1996, and then again in 1998, had a big impact on our youth group and me in particular. And I remember we went to the jail. I probably heard some of the most powerful sermons that I've ever heard in the jail. Men coming forward, asking for prayer, men, you know, crying, attentive, listening to every word.
One night, Dennis Calabrese and I, we had gone into the jail. I was talking to them about what did your attorney tell you to do when you would get into the court and the judge would bring the charges before you. And they, one of them said, he would say, don't admit to nothing. And says, that's right. But what would God have you to do? Well, God wants us to confess the truth. That's right. And so at that moment, one of the men, he got up and he started before all these men. Now, you know, when we would go to the jail, they would bring them all into one cell, and there was a lot of men. And we were just right on the other side of the bars, and there was no guard in there with us. It was just Dennis and me and all the men that were there. And And this man, he began to actually tell what he had done before all these men. And he was weeping about it and how bad he felt. And he said, I want to ask God for forgiveness. He says, would you pray for me? So he walked up to the front, got to where the bars were. He got on his knees and he asked us to pray for him. So we reached through the bars, we laid our hands on him. And after we finished praying for him, then another man got up and he confessed what he did. And he came forward, we prayed for him. Pretty soon we had prayed for almost everybody there. This one guy said, well, you know, I didn't really do what they accused me of. But some of the things that I had done that I got away with were much worse. A couple of years later, I was in Gallup with my son, Michael. And we were in a store and this Navajo man came up to me and he said, do you remember me? I said, yes, you were in the jail, weren't you? He said, yes, I was there that night. And I was one of the ones that confessed that night. And I want to tell you that when I went to the judge and I told him what I did and I admitted to it, he let me off. And I went home and I went up to my wife and I begged her to forgive me. And she took me in and she forgave me. And I got my family back. I got my job back. And he said, I want to introduce you to my family. They're right here. Here's my wife. Here's my children. My son was sitting there, or standing there, and he was seeing all of this. And I didn't know the impact it was having on him. But that day on the way home, that was the first time that I really had an opportunity to talk to my son about why we had come there. And I could see he kept asking questions. And this was the first time he had been so receptive. And later on, when Michael was ordained a minister, he gave a sermon where he talked about how that day had begun to change his life when he heard what had happened in the jail and how it had changed that man's life.
My name is Ann Calabrese, and I am Black sheep, and born for Turijini, which is bitter water. And that's how we introduce ourselves. And my paternal grandfather is Kapanha. No, maternal grandfather is Kapanha. Paternal is Hanavani, so that's my clan. The church has been very good to me. From the very beginning, I met the church prior to me and Dennis coming together. Dennis Calabrese has been my husband. I came, I was living next door to John and Chris Mancini. And that's how I kind of got to know the church. And they showed me love and compassion. Back at the time when I really needed it. It was a time when I was trying to get my life together. And it was just myself and my son at the time. Of course, my son started going to Vacation Bible School, and at one point or another, John and Chris took Ryan to one of the campouts. So I kind of had that connection going on. And but later on, I found out more about all this that has happened, that took place, and it has always come to me that. That they're servants, you know, they're the servants of God. That they show a lot of love, the love that they carry. You know, not can't single out anybody that has never, you know, showed that love of God. They're always, when I'm going through stuff, you know, they're always like, can I pray for you? Can I help you? Can I help you? You know, there's always that. And I guess I never experienced that. And each one of them, they've dedicated their lives to the Navajo people here. They have not stopped. And some of them have gone home because that was the desire that they had to be here to share that love of God. And that's my husband and Dwayne. I just pray that I would always work along all of you. So.